Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
The Adam White, who's ready to roll. He's a Tuesday specialist around here, and he's back again. Good morning, Adam.
You're the Tuesday specialist. You love Tuesdays.
I just know it's peak season.
It's peak season.
It's peak season.
I've got a bit of a problem today. I don't know really how to handle it.
What's happened?
You might be able to help me.
Talk to our listeners. Let them help you.
Andrew Mays has gone on holidays.
Yes.
As you know. He's about to have, well, he's not, but they're he and Claire are about to have their second child.
Is that why Joe Pignataro is doing the breakfast bite?
Joe Pignataro is doing the breakfast bite, and this is the concern I have. And I need to tell, I haven't had a chance to speak to him about this before the show.
Oh, no.
So Joe's doing the breakfast bite.
Is he getting sacked? Is this a sacking?
He might. He leads with Collingwood.
Why would he do that?
Because his obsession with Collingwood is off the charts. So, Jeremy Howe's injury update.
No one cares. No one cares about Jeremy Howe's injury update. It's practice match season.
Darcy Moore.
What's Darcy done?
Apparently, he was elevated to the leadership group about 3 weeks ago.
No one cares, Joe.
Yeah, he spoke about that. Then we start getting into the Do Better report.
Oh,
I thought that was last month.
We've done that.
And all of a sudden, then, we start previewing a practice game between Collingwood and Richmond, which is happening in about 2 weeks' time.
That didn't happen, did it?
Now,
did that happen?
How do you handle this? Because the obsession for Collingwood...
Well, it's a real sit-down situation, I
wouldn't it? I think it's one of those things where we get in a room. What's that called? When they, I don't know.
360 feedback sort of
thing? Yeah, it's leading teams when they all get in a room and they, all family and friends and...
Intervention.
This is a grown man who's 30 years of age who wears short sleeve jumpers to football matches.
No, I'm okay
Collingwood
with
football,
you know,
short
I'm okay
sleeves,
with that.
And now it's starting to affect his work.
You know, I'm okay with the jumper. That works for me. That is a great concern that there is four items on the agenda for the Magpies.
Jeremy Howe injury update.
What's wrong with
Darcy Howe elevation to the leadership group?
Darcy Moore. Who is Darcy Howe?
I don't know.
It's his brother.
The Do Better report. And a preview to a practice match, including talking about the opposition in the practice match.
Well, it's important to talk about the opposition to balance out the conversation to some level, I imagine.
Anyway.
He's a professional.
Almost drove off the road.
It's just a bit excessive from our man. He can't quite get the colours out of his head.
Even watched the AFLW on Sunday.
Why are you surprised by that?
Anyway.
You would have watched it?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
I was doing other things.
Well, he would have been watching the Magpies do a bit of a number on the D's. The best team in... Undefeated they are, the Magpies, if you don't mind. Undefeated. They are going gangbusters. So no wonder he's up and about.
Anyway.
It's a great start to the season for the Magpies. They're undefeated in all teams.
Have we got Joe Cleary coming back on again this morning?
I don't know. Well, Joe Pignataro,
what a performance.
No, it was nothing short of spectacular. Nothing short of spectacular.
Can you remember what he said at the end, the four things that he said?
Something about kick tires light fires. Before that, it would have been... No, I don't know.
Sit, steer, stand, cheer, kick tires, light fires.
Great little hashtags they would have been.
Our
man has done a great job.
$3.30 it paid.
We took the $3.30 on the spreadsheet. Disconcerted, is what it was called? Disconcerted?
I think so.
It was a great result for the spreadsheet because we were paddling a bit and we had to go interstate to find a winner. But we did. And we did. We worked out late that there was no racing in Victoria yesterday. So we found someone and Joe Cleary was our man. And he couldn't have been more emphatic. And that is going to be a promo for the generations.
Yes, it will be. No doubt.
I'm looking forward to
real sort of Hall of Fame walk-in. Sort of wins a Norwich Rising Star Award and then gets into the Hall of Fame in the one go. Amazing.
Is he straight in?
Oh, no doubt. How can you not?
Well, I don't know. How can you not, I suppose. But I consider saving us from our own peril at the moment. It's worthy of ultimate reward, I imagine. So, yep, fair enough. Joe Cleary's into the Hall of Fame. Mm. And we'll probably never hear from him again. Although there will be, I'm sure, more race-free days in Victoria. And we're just going to go straight to Joe.
Mm.
Just to see what's happening in Queanbeyan and Cowra. And the like.
Sapphire Coast.
The Sapphire Coast. He loves starters at the Sapphire Coast. Andrew Mays, a little bit of feedback for Andrew Mays off the SMS. hasn't Andrew Mays worked from home for the last 12 months? Surely he can still do it from home for 6 weeks with the bub. Well, we've all been home a fair bit at the Baker, as you well know, through the last 12 months. But you raise an interesting point. And he'd be up anyway, you'd imagine, with the bub. Although it does take away the opportunity for our man, Frank, or Joey, to get those dulcets out there on the wireless and talk about the Magpies. So he's probably letting him have his moment of glory.
Horry makes a good point also on the SMS 0416 90 50 52 that Joe tipped us another winner at the Sapphire Coast, one of the other horses that he doesn't train.
Oh, did he? Did that win? We had to narrow our focus a little bit yesterday because of the lack of success we've had in recent times. We didn't really bother about the one that he sort of tipped us into. We needed to get the one that he tipped us on for the promo situation. Because we just had to cheer at home. Did you see it, Race?
No, I didn't actually.
Braindom.
Yeah, I didn't. I just missed it.
Braindom.
I was flat. I actually didn't back it, to be honest. That was, yeah. Anyway.
Is there a... Sorry.
That's all right. No, that's all.
You were going to say something then?
No, I was just going to move on.
Oh, well, so am I.
Okay, you go.
Are you a bit flat this morning, not just because of Joey's fascination and infatuation with the Magpies, or are you flat because of the three Moomba Monarchs that have been announced? Not one of them is you.
Oh, I couldn't give I couldn't care less about that.
Well, no. I think you will when you work out who the Moomba Monarchs are.
No, I know who they are.
Well, do you?
Well.
Who are they?
They're representation of society from 2020.
So Tram Depot Cleaner Praveeni Fernando, Royal Melbourne Hospital Infectious Disease Physician Kirsty Boising, I think that's right, Boising, and Coles Eastland Store Support Manager Drew Law will rule over this year's revamped Moomba Festival, which, of course, we got back on after we protested.
It was real Neil Mitchell areas we put pressure on.
We did. Sally Capp's a big listener of the program, Lord Mayor, and she said, you know what? Those boys made good sense talking about Moomba being back on. So three Moomba Monarchs, real monarchs of the people, the people's champions, so to speak, sort of the rock in the WWE. People's champions have been announced, and I would have thought that you were a no-brainer.
No.
As an inspiration to the nation.
Oh, yeah.
As a leader of people around here at RSN 927, this was a given that you would have been allocated a spot on the monarch table.
No interest.
I think it's disappointing.
No interest in that whatsoever.
But
I did think it was interesting, Daniel, that there was a change within 24 hours of us discussing the fact that it was a disgrace that Moomba was cancelled, that it was back on. We also put pressure on something else. Oh, yes, that Essendon and Hawthorn should be moved to the MCG. All of a sudden, we talked about that yesterday, and all of a sudden there's been a push for that as well. We are becoming movers and shakers.
Essendon have officially announced a request for the upgrade to the MCG, the change of allocation of that game to the MCG. But I'm disappointed you're not a member of Monarch. I'd like to see you and the future Australian captain and his brother and his sister on the float. Em could be there too, although I'm not sure that's her scene.
Oh, yeah, that's mine.
It is your scene. You love the high life. You love the social activities and being a man of the people. You're a connector. You're a real connector for people. I'm disappointed about that. Very, very disappointed about that. Off the SMS, Todd from Perth. Todd from Perth. Good luck to you. Listening at 3:15 in the morning. Go, Joe. This is about our man Frank at the back. It's good not to hear Whitey dribble on about Essendon. That's funny work from Todd. Just off the SMS.
Going through some of those Essendon players from last week's game that might make their debut in round one, there's quite a few of them. Would you like to talk about those?
Who are they?
I wouldn't have a clue. Now, I was going to wait for tomorrow, and we will talk about this tomorrow, but I'm interested in your views on something.
What is that?
The Australian netball team play their first test match against New Zealand tomorrow, on the same day that Australia resume their T20 hostilities with New Zealand. And Stacey Marinkovic, the coach of the netball team, has decided that they're going to rotate the captaincy through internationals.
Yes.
Before they decide what they're going to do. Now, Lisa Alexander has come out quite strongly and said that she's uncomfortable with that as a decision.
Yep.
What's your view?
What is my view? Well, I think we need to leave Stacey to do her thing. at the moment. It'll give her a chance to find her feet in that leadership role as the coach of the Diamonds and the way she wants to work within that leadership group, because she's been charged with that position.
Mm.
Now, that's not to say, or mind you, that Lisa isn't entitled to express an opinion on what she is seeing currently with the Diamonds. I mean, she's well versed in that product, clearly being one of the longest serving Diamonds coach, I think she might be. So she's well versed and entitled to have an opinion on that. But I'm not sure that before we see the results, can there be too much conversation about the validity of the leadership system that Stacey's enacted for this series against New Zealand?
Yeah, I actually disagree with that. Because what they do with the captaincy has nothing to do with whether they win or lose, or game style or anything like this. This is a philosophy of whether you're prepared to trial leadership, trial things in actual test matches.
So what's
actual international?
So are you for or against?
I'm absolutely against it.
Right.
Yeah. I don't care that much about it, but I'm surprised that they would fiddle with something in actual international matches.
Well, this is else do you fiddle with it? This is a new era. It's a new coach with a new squad with a new generation of players coming through, as we discussed with Sherelle last week. So, and we live in a moment or a time when they haven't had a chance to get together, really, and work out who's who in the zoo. So this is the chance, I think, to make sure you find the right person and the right traits for the team that you're building.
But most of these girls have played for Australia, and at the very least, they play for their clubs around Australia in the Super Netball competition.
I hope so.
They know who has got good leadership qualities. They know who are good players. They know who people will sort of stand behind. They've been in quarantine for the last couple of weeks, getting to know each other if they didn't already.
They haven't had a meal together. They haven't been knowing each other at all.
They've been going to training.
Yeah. So they go to the bus, they get to training, and they come back.
It actually doesn't sit comfortably with me that when you are playing international matches, you're rotating the captaincy around to find out who your leader should be. You should know who it is.
I'm okay with it. 0416 90 50 52, yay or nay for the rotating policy. It's only going to be this series. Like, it's not as if it's going to be a year-long program.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
And she hasn't had time to... My main point is she hasn't had time to deal with the players from a group setting to understand the dynamics and who are the influences. It's all very well to say, yes, they show leadership qualities through their club matches and club life, but this is the national level again, so it's a different level again. You don't know how people interact or engage at a different level. We talked about yesterday, with even just from a performance perspective, with Travis Head in the world of cricket, Shield dominator, but can't quite do the same thing at test level. So he's not going to be captain just at the minute because he can't perform at that level. So that, if you go by that philosophy, can't play that game.
But Daniel, they're not going to rotate the Australian captaincy in cricket in one day internationals or in test matches. They're not going to do that. They'll pick a captain, and that's their job. They're not going to do that sort of thing in other sports. You might rotate the captaincy through a pre-season in AFL football until they settle on the one they want, but you're not going to rotate the captaincy until you work out who it's going to be. You know, from round four to round eight.
We've got three captains and four captains. And
yeah, but they're Grant Thomas, co-captains.
Did 22 captains one year.
No, he didn't. He changed it every year.
22 captains.
No, every year, every not
week.
One a year.
Every
not
week.
One a week. I don't know. I think it was interesting, Lisa Alexander being so strong on the comments, considering she was the former coach. She was probably putting that situation to a point because she's on that offsiders program. But,
yep.
Yeah, I don't know. It annoyed me a bit, to be honest.
The captaincy part of it?
Yeah. Because it's like when in cricket they blood a one-day international player or they blood a T20 player to have a look. And they're doing that at the moment, but that's through circumstances with, you know, not the best team there and all that sort of thing. I just don't think you should be experimenting when you're playing international matches for your country.
But they're not experimenting from a playing perspective.
No, they're not.
It's just a leadership perspective.
Yeah.
So
yep.
the grand scheme of things, doesn't it
take away the luster of being captain? That these are international matches now. So now you go, even on the honour board, you'll have five or six different captains in one series.
You'll have maximum four. There's only four games.
Well,
I'd be surprised if five or six came through. I get your point. But I think you're entitled to try and find the right person. And again, We have been living through extraordinary circumstances in the last 12 months, the last 15 months, whatever it might be, on the back of the whole virus situation. So we haven't had, this is nothing normal about life in the last little while. So if you need to change things up a little bit to find the right outcome for a new coach with a new squad emerging, trying to find a way to win those titles back that we've lost in the last couple of years in Super Netball, my personal opinion is that is open season, it's kosher, and go your hardest. And Stace has backed up over it and said, I've got no problem with it. Lisa, I've got no problem with Lisa. She's a very strong-willed and strong-minded person. And not surprised to hear her have a say on this or an opinion on this, as you say, putting that position on the TV on the weekend. But, my personal opinion is no dramas. But Sherelle will be, I think she's the barometer tomorrow for us. She gets to make the final call.
Well, I know what she's going to say. She's an assistant coach too, Stace.
Not necessarily. She might have a different leadership philosophy. She may.
Hmm.
We'll see. Let's get to Whitey's world famous quiz. We're playing for the $210 voucher at Velado's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, family business for 960 years. Lunch or dinner for two, if you don't mind. It is worthwhile winning. In fact, it's an institution in Victorian dining.
I'm not sure whether the strawberry pancakes are thrown in as well, but...
strawberry pancakes?
Yeah, you get strawberry pancakes, like the crepes. They come after the steak.
Do you know what? It's an institution, and I've never actually been to Velado's. I've never been. I feel a little bit dirty and a bit ashamed of myself, but I've never actually been. And I'm really disappointed in myself now that we're working with them. Not just because of that, but just because I've drive past it all the time and I really want to go, but I just never have. So anyway, I can't go today because I'm not going to get a chance to ring in because the board is full.
It is full. You have to admit that it's full, and off the text message, no, we haven't been hit with a third wave. This is just back with popular demand.
That's very funny. You can't waffle, by the way. You can't M&A. You can't say, that's a good question, Whitey. You can't tell a background story after the answer. You can't add colour to the answers, but you can use Google. You can ask
a
friend. No, you can't. You can do what you like because you won't be able to get caught. Postcodes are welcome. We'll tell you where Big Dog is in the queue if he calls. There's no hotspots. And my hint is available for every question for Whitey's World Famous 5 question of Lotto Steakhouse quiz.
I think we'll go line and length to start with, just to get ease back in. So not too difficult this morning. Ian from Pakenham is going to start things off. Ian, good morning.
G'day, how you going?
I'm good. How exciting is it that the quiz is back?
Oh, it's very exciting. It's been a long time.
Yeah, correct. Correct. I can just tell in your voice. You're very excited.
He's inspired.
All right, yeah. Ian, question number one for you. Which cricketer scored a Sheffield Shield double century over the weekend?
Oh, I only heard about Travis Head. He didn't score a double, though. Oh, I've got no idea. Travis Head.
Well, that's amazing.
That's a remarkable answer.
It's a remarkable answer. It's correct.
How we got there is quite remarkable.
You identified the fact that Travis Head made a lot of runs. You also identified the fact he didn't make a double century. You went with that as an answer, and it was correct.
Well, he must have came in the next day and finished it off.
He did. Correct. He did. He came back. He was 180-odd not out. And he
that's
got,
right.
It's nearly 220. All right, well done. Question number two.
It's a remarkable story.
Very, very good, Ian. Who is the coach of the Australian netball team? She's new.
Oh, you just said it before.
We did.
We did, yeah. We did.
Oh, she has an interesting name. Starts with M, her last name.
Ian. No, Ian. No, you weren't really going down the right line there.
Oh, no, he was.
Well, he sort of was.
He was a real Travis Head area. He was all over the shop, but he was sort of there.
No luck, Ian. Craig from Keilor, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, boys.
Okay, question two for you. Who is the coach?
Stop there. Daniel, can you help me out, mate?
And because you're so honest and so direct, I will help you out. The name of the Australian Diamonds netball coach, just between you and me, Craig, before you tell Whitey, is Stacey Marinkovic.
Hang on.
The hint is available. Craig, go for Marinkovic.
Yes, Marinkovic.
Yeah, well played.
Well, you can't do that.
Mate,
we've got
didn't you see the screen?
We have got a $220 voucher from Vlado's.
Yeah, it gets no more
there
kilos.
Needs to be some integrity. Just because we haven't got government supervisors.
It's in the rules. It's in the rules. Val's
I'm
not here.
I'm very uncomfortable about that.
It's in the rules.
Craig, question number three. No more hints. Essendon wants its round one match moved to the MCG against which club in round one?
Fremantle.
Not Fremantle. Bad luck, Craig. Let's get to Josh from Greensboro. Josh, good morning.
Morning, lads.
Essendon wants its round one match moved from Marvel Stadium to the MCG in round one against which team?
Oh, jeez. Hawthorn, maybe? Jeez. Oh, bang.
We're not exactly setting the world on fire with our answers here today, are we?
We're all a bit flat.
We're guessing. We're just
all right. I don't think you've got going to get this one, Josh, but good luck. Who won the WGC event in Florida yesterday? So we're talking about a golf tournament, a World Golf Championship event. It was his first win in a WGC to add to a major he won last year.
Wasn't it Colin Morikawa?
Very good, Josh.
Now there was some confidence.
Yeah, and a little bit of disappointment that I doubted him. Well done, Josh. Well done. Okay, last question.
This is it.
This for the two... Is it 210 or 220?
210.
$210 voucher to Vlado's. In Richmond, one of the great establishments in Melbourne. World famous. Josh, who did Naomi Osaka defeat in the Australian Open final a couple of weeks ago?
Josh.
Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to Big Dog.
What?
We are going to go to Big Dog.
Is he in the queue?
He's in the queue. Big Dog, a chance to go to Vlado's.
Good morning, lad.
Morning, dog.
$210 voucher for two.
Gee whiz, this is time and place sort of stuff for you, dog.
Who did Naomi Osaka defeat in the Australian Open final 2 weeks ago?
I've got sweaty palms, but I'm going to say Jen Brady.
He's got it! What a way to start a new quiz.
I hear it, but I don't believe it.
This is a big moment, big dog. What a prize.
Wowee, dog. Well done to you.
The dog's going to eat the meat.
The dog is going to eat the meat. We are giving you lunch or dinner for two, dog, valued at $210 at Vlado's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years. It is the place to be, and you will be there, dog. That is a fantastic performance. Time and place for the dog. He had no luck throughout COVID, but his world has changed. Now that we have some level of normality again. Well done to the dog.
Well, and brilliant. I mean, the exciting thing is that this is on for weeks.
Well, that is correct.
So this is just terrific. So many of our listeners are going to get to go to Vlado's. That's exciting.
Do we get to go at any stage?
I hope so.
I'd like that to happen. If we could talk to our people who know people there, that would be good. I'd like to get there. Well done, dog. That is a fantastic performance. It will be back tomorrow morning. And so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I think we're quizzing.
Yep.
For the next, next long time, period of time.
Indefinitely.
My understanding is. So a chance to be a part of something very special there at Vlado's. So thank you for their support. But
where is Vlado's again?
It's in Bridge Road, Richmond.
Correct.
I drove past it lots. Just never popped in. Have you been there?
Yes, I have.
It was sort of jumpy?
Yeah, no, I have.
You have, right? Yep. Just checking. That is very funny. Very funny from the dog. Wasn't expecting that. Normally it's... Who's the one that we just sort of use as a scratching?
Oh, what's his name?
Is it Damien and Cranbourne?
Damien. It's from a variety of different places around town.
Hey, did you see... There's a bit happening in the world of sporting administration. Have you seen that the Melbourne Storm, Dave Donaghy situation has flared up?
Yeah.
Again, because there are fears that Brisbane is set to pinch our man, Craig Bellamy. As part of the acquisition of Dave Donaghy. It's central to the Melbourne Storm's legal stoush with Dave, so the court documents have told us. The battle's landed in the Victorian Supreme Court. Now, that's an escalation in proceedings. Storm have applied for an injunction preventing Donaghy from taking up his role with the Broncos. The feud between Donaghy, this is from Steve Zimek in the News Limited papers today, and the Storm has become so bitter that they seek to enforce a six-month non-compete clause, which would prevent Donaghy from starting at the Broncos until August 1. Now, very rarely, if ever, have I heard of an administrator being required to enact or complete the non-compete clause in all the contracts. Because all the contracts have these things. But when normally they get the boot, so they're encouraged to go and work somewhere else. So this non-compete clause doesn't really apply. But the Storm, because they fear that there's been a little bit of subterfuge to try and take Craig Bellamy to the Broncos, have decided that they will fight this to the nth degree to uphold the contract.
And I mean, you've got to throw in the Cameron Smith situation as well, but I think it is more the Bellamy one that they're kind of concerned about. So, yeah. I mean, there's going to always be, particularly at the moment, this link between the Storm and the Broncos, because so many of the Storm's key players and key administrators, coaches, have links to Brisbane. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
The Storm lawyer said, Donaghy, you know he's in trouble when you just get the surname, knows the details of Craig Bellamy's employment with the Melbourne Storm. He's a leading coach in the NRL. His contract expires next year and will be up for renegotiation. The Broncos are trying to recruit Mr. Bellamy as a coach or consultant. Donaghy has a pre-existing relationship with Bellamy and is aware of the terms that Melbourne Storm is prepared to offer Mr. Bellamy.
What do you think about that? Because, I mean, it's not that this sort of stuff hasn't happened before in other sports. Often you've seen footy managers or CEOs go to a particular club and then they reunite. I think of... did Greg Swan get Mick Malthouse to Carlton?
I reckon he might have.
Was that having been at Collingwood, I think that happened.
I think he might
but,
have.
I mean, I'm not saying that they necessarily would have known the specifics of the contractual details, but I think that becomes pretty well known, doesn't it? When negotiations or renegotiations are happening with contracts,
I imagine they would. My surprise in this, I must admit, is the fact that Craig Bellamy seemingly has been quite open about the conversations he's had, or the conversations other clubs have had with him to perhaps move on at the end of next season with the Melbourne Storm, and surely they're getting to the point now where they think it's almost a fait accompli that he will leave the Storm at the end of next season. And to be locking up and to be getting so aggressive to try and limit that that possibility for one club in particular does seem somewhat excessive, I must admit.
Yeah, but he almost left last time and he chose not to. But I think when he did sign on the dotted line, that the inference was that it was probably going to be his last contract at the Storm. He's been there a very, very long time. I think the Storm are a little bit concerned that, you know, the era does finish if they lose Bellamy as well as all the senior players. Because the reality is the senior players can't play forever. But Craig Bellamy can kind of coach forever, can't he? To keep that culture and keep that thing.
But seemingly all the conversations we're hearing from Craig and the news that go around this is that when he does complete this contract with the Storm, that he'll be more into a coaching director.
Yes, well, that's right. Brisbane have got a new coach themselves. Role. Yeah, it's not going to be the senior coach. And so if he was to go, what's the other club he's been linked to in Sydney?
Was it Cronulla? Canterbury or Cronulla?
And that's not as a senior coach either.
Yeah, that's right. So that's what I'm saying, that the fact that there's seemingly such an aggressive stance against Brisbane. Now, I know Brisbane have been a powerhouse for years, but they haven't been a rough trot of recent times. And considering that he's almost suggested that this will be his last coaching contract, yeah. I'm not sure why they're going so hard. We should try and get someone on. We should try and get Matty Tripp on. That's what we should try and do, the chairman of the Melbourne Storm board. Because he's been there since 2003, Craig Bellamy. I reckon he's served his time. That's a long period of time to be in charge of the Melbourne Storm. 18 years.
Yeah.
Coming up for game number 466 for the first game of the season. But, yeah, considering the conversations about him and his future, where it seemingly is outside of game day, week-to-week coaching, but more as a mentor, manager, consultant going forward, I am surprised that it's such an aggressive stance towards Dave in particular, who's taken over the CEO role of the Broncos.
Yep, I agree with that. I'm just trying to work out something.
What are you trying to work out?
Keep talking.
Well, I'm just going to make sure. I can see Jimmy Bartell at the back. That's good news because he's coming up after 7 o'clock. He's very, very good around the traps. Shane Van Gisbergen. So, while you're talking, let's get to Shane Van Gisbergen.
Well, no, I remember it now. Adam O'Brien is the coach of Newcastle in the NRL.
Yes.
He was the senior assistant coach to Craig Bellamy. There was a hope perhaps that the Storm would get him to come back and take over from Craig Bellamy because he has the Bellamy philosophies and all that sort of thing. He's only just re-signed in the last couple of days with Newcastle. So as a result of that, that's another one off the table, which would make life just a little bit more difficult for the Melbourne Storm to get the coach they wanted if it was that Craig Bellamy wasn't to continue on.
It was great to see the V8 Supercars, the Supercar Championship, open up on the weekend at Bathurst. We mentioned it last week with Craig Lowndes. It was a great convo. It's not in Adelaide. It was at Bathurst. And the man who took the Mountain Charm absolutely by the horns, he did, was Shane Van Gisbergen. Took out both races. A perfect start to his 2021 season. He joins us on the line. Shane, good morning.
Yeah, morning, guys. How are you?
Going very well. Thank you, buddy. A terrific performance by you, taking out both races, Saturday and Sunday, but just on the venue to start the season, as opposed to being in Adelaide and being at the Mountain, how does it change the way the dynamic of the season is?
Oh, it's a race we're going to miss for sure. Adelaide was one of the best places to start the season and always had massive crowds. And so hopefully one day it could possibly come back. But yeah, for sure, after last year, to have an atmosphere and have it at Bathurst and a good way to start was pretty awesome as well.
And what's it like to race at Bathurst in more of that sprint format as opposed to the 1,000K Enduro you get at the Mountain at the end of the season? How different is it to prepare for and drive in?
Oh, it wasn't too different, actually. Like, the intensity was super high, just the races were shorter. But, yeah, the qualifyings and the shootouts and the races, it felt every bit as intense of the 1,000.
Mark Scaife was saying throughout the coverage, or at the end of the coverage, that was a big, big statement from you, what you did on the weekend. Did you want to make a statement to start off the season?
Oh, not really. You just won some races. But, I guess so. But it's certainly a good way to start. You know, it was a good weekend for us, and to win both races and be up the front is the perfect way to start the season. But long way to go. We've just got to keep that momentum up.
I'm interested, Shane. I mean, you are someone that has won the championship before, but this whole thing about Scott McLaughlin not being there now and everyone's looking for the heir apparent, do you welcome that conversation or do you kind of get a bit frustrated by it?
Yeah, not really. Yeah.
you don't want to add any more?
It's pretty straightforward, I reckon.
It's not, yeah, I don't have anything to add.
Nah, fair enough. What's it going to be like, though, with him not there? And obviously you driving a Holden and it's the last year of Holden, all that sort of thing. Is that something that is a little bit more special and a bit more focused to try and go as high as you can this year?
Oh, for sure. And we had that last year. You know, it was our, we were factory supported last year by Holden, and it was a pretty awesome way to send them off. And obviously we'll race them this year without a Holden support. But next year, you know, with the Camaro coming in, should be pretty awesome as well. So looking forward to that and seeing what that car looks like for sure.
So on this car, how did it feel? I mean, it almost can't get a bigger test than Bathurst. Did it feel like you thought it would? Did it surprise you?
Oh, it was the same car as last year I was running. So it's, still nothing wrong with that one. She's beauty.
No, that was a pretty good car too, just by the way. But in terms of time in the car and the build-up to the season, how long have you had in preparation for the start of the season, just hours in the car?
Oh, we only get one test day, so we don't get too much driving, but I was back in New Zealand and did a bit of rally and some single-seater stuff and did a bit of motorbike riding, which is perfect training for V8, so I need to do some more of that, which is good. But, awesome fun.
So we'll take us into that. Do a lot of drivers do motorbike riding to prepare, or is it something you've picked up in recent times?
Oh, I just do it for fun. Over summer where I got time to fix myself if I get hurt. But, it's awesome. But, you know, you just have to keep the brain active and keep the body moving because we don't get to practice as much as we'd like. So got to keep sharp.
So is it Toby Price sort of bike riding, or is it to a Wayne Gardner bike riding?
No, I'm very slow. I'm nothing like that.
Right, so what happens now? I mean, in the recovery process from a weekend at Bathurst, does it take more out of you than a weekend at Adelaide would physically?
Oh, no, similar. You know, you're pretty drained. Like, the prep's been huge the last few weeks. And then, you know, we'll have a couple of days off now and then we'll start debriefing the weekend and thinking of things we could have done better to be faster next time we race.
And next time you're at Sandown, what's your record like at Sandown? It's only in a couple of weeks, a super sprint sort of format as well. What are you looking forward to coming down to Melbourne?
Yeah, it should be good. I think we've got, you know, soft tyres and a few little changes of format. So it should be interesting to see how the race goes. And hopefully with the formats and pit stops, it makes for a lot of passing. Should be something a bit different, which will be good.
And the next couple of weeks for you, what does it hold? Have you got more bike riding coming up? Do you get a chance to chill out, or are you in full focus mode just working on the car and getting yourself ready?
Yeah, I've got next weekend off, and then the weekend after racing GT at Phillip Island. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, plenty of driving, which is good.
I saw him gallivanting across the nation across the weekend, Jim. You were almost as if that there was no virus at all. You were just living the life, you high life, you socialite sort of fella. Morning, Jim.
You've taken that a bit far.
And ran with have extrapolated it a little bit.
Must have been to Sydney where you can just do normal things. Is that where you went?
I did go to Sydney. Like everybody, we've been sort of confined with our 5 kilometre box for most of the year. And as my role up there, the Giants, I haven't been able to, you know, press the flesh. As they say.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, shake a few babies, kiss a few hands, do all that sort of stuff. But, no, I got up, saw the Giants play a bit of a scratchy against the Swans out at the Olympic, you know, the Giants ground out there, Giant Stadium.
Giant Stadium.
As it's known now. Watched a few of the first years get around and, yeah, had a good chat to Leon and Steve Keneally, all that sort of stuff.
So, whilst you mentioned not being able to get up there, how have you stayed connected with the footy department, with Leon, with the board? Obviously, there's Zoom activities and all sorts of stuff. But how often would you have been in connection with them with your role as director of football?
Oh, lots of phone calls and text messages. But obviously, you don't want to hassle them during their time off. You just touch base. And then as the season gets closer, you probably upping that communication. Where is people at? How's the injuries? Obviously, the unfortunate injury to big Braden Poos, who was going really well. He finally found a young ruckman. So we're not having to go back to big sausage fingers all the time, Shane Mumford, who's been on our rookie list, which feels like for 10 years, and we have to keep breaking the glass and playing him.
Do we need to change that too, by the way, while you bring that up? It's something that has annoyed me for quite some time, this rookie list situation where 85-year-olds get a chance to be on the rookie list. That's not really what it's for, is it?
Well, for
us, why don't we have a veterans list then? We're going to do this.
Supplementary list.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to be naming them rookies.
Well, once you did away with the veterans list, there was always going to be sort of, you call it a hole on your list, a spot.
But the veterans list was done away with because of the money outside the cap. You don't need to have that lever in as a veterans list category.
No.
But it does make a mockery of the rookie list and the whole philosophy about giving a young talent, a chance on a list to emerge through being a part of the system.
Yeah, but it's a bit of list balance and things like that. And Shane does some ruck coaching and things like that.
I'm not saying he shouldn't be on the list, but there should be another category if that's the case.
Because he's not a rookie.
Because he's far from a rookie.
He's far, 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 far from a rookie. He's enormous. But as you do, you do a lot of reading when you're sitting around airports. You pick up news.
Well, before you go down there, I want to ask you one more question. Oh, sorry.
I saw you prick up when he said, oh, you're doing the Giants.
Yeah, no, but I'm interested in your thoughts on the mood you got up there from them. Because we spoke to Tim Taranto, I think, last week.
Yeah, I was here.
Yeah, you were. That's right. last week. Yeah. But just you feeling on, because I don't think anyone can really work out what to expect from them last year, considering how disappointing they were unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. They've obviously lost Zach Williams, they've lost Jeremy Cameron. How do you think they'll bounce back?
Yeah, I think it's been a little bit overplayed. We do fall into a bit of a trap, and we all do it with the narrative. Like, so if someone sets the agenda or the storyline with football clubs or players, we tend to keep going down that path and not have our own individual thinking with it. It's a lot easier just to follow the crowd with it. And I felt like that started to happen a bit with the Giants, you know, mass exodus, cultural problems and all that. But when you actually break it down for each individual, there's a lot of just basic list management decisions. So Zach Williams, fantastic player and things like that, but we do have a thing called a salary cap. We can't fit them all in. You got to make decisions. We've got young Lockie Ash there, who was a very high draft pick, ready to go at halfback. We've got Lockie Whitfield. We've moved to halfback. So then you start going, well, how much do you invest in your halfback line? Carlton gave him a fantastic offer. Wish him all the best. Would absolutely have loved to keep Jeremy Cameron, but he's made his decision. We offered him a good contract. Look, that's just pure nuts and bolts or the business of football. So we can't do much about that. Zach Langdon goes to West Coast. Again, it becomes a financial and list management decision. So you bring in Zach Langdon, goes out, but then that opens up an opportunity for one of our first-year players, just Tanner Bruin, who I was talking to you guys off air about, was fantastic in the scratch match.
No, I understand that. But if you take out one of the best forwards in the game and one of the best half-back rebound players in the league, it's going to have an impact.
Yeah, but you still got to fit them all under your salary cap. What are you supposed to do?
No, absolutely, you got to fit them under the salary cap.
Nathan Buckley said if we had $100 million, we'd keep them all.
But from the point of view of fitting them under the salary cap and it having a tangible effect on how many games you win, if you take Cameron Williams out, that's going to make a difference.
It does, but that doesn't mean we're going to be worse.
No, that's right. That's why we wanted to try to determine what to make of the Giants. Because
which I think is fair. Like, even if you go off last year's performances and you look at the schedule ahead, it's a lot harder to know where they're at compared to if you're going back a year further after the season. You go, geez, you'd mark that one down.
Yep.
Of some of those games, and being honest and frank and answering your question, I think some of those games where the year before you would have gone, tick, you've gone, ooh, hang on.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can.
Might just go whoosh because they've got the opportunity as well, and that's what makes it a bit mysterious, the Giants.
And some experienced players as well. So, like, Cal Ward gets another year after his injury. Taranto, who we spoke about, people forget he missed a huge amount of the season without, and coming off the back of a best and fairer, so he was up and about flying. He missed it a fair bit. There's been some injuries, and I think they're going to be a lot more settled side in their positions. So I think they went through last year, just keep shuffling the deck chairs to try and find, a combination that works. I think they're going to, sort of bed down in their roles a bit more.
Cameron Percy had stars in his eyes in the last round of the Puerto Rico Open yesterday in the US PGA Tour, yesterday morning our time. We're following him with great interest because he's one of our friends and he's been good enough to join us on the line this morning. Cam, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
Great to have you with us. Gee, we were riding you hard yesterday. Did you feel Whitey sort of getting the whip out at the 12th hole?
I didn't. I was right there, and I couldn't get it done yesterday, unfortunately. So, I was really close. But I played really good on Friday and Saturday and didn't really get much out of it. So, I mean, I played okay yesterday, but it was really crazy windy again. But Friday, Saturday, I left a lot of shots out there, and in the end, that's what cost me winning.
Your form this season to date has been really good. I've obviously spoken to you for a lot in the last couple of years and followed your progress with great interest, but you're seemingly as consistent as I've ever known on the PGA Tour at the moment, Cam. What's the difference? What's the secret?
I don't know. When you turn 46, you're supposed to get worse.
That's what I'm thinking.
But, I think one of the things is I just can't go after it anymore. So the shots, I'm really consistent with my irons. I don't hit like a 5-iron, 205 to 220. It literally goes 205 all the time or stuff like that. And I'm not trying to drive greens because I just can't do it anymore. I just can't hit it as far as I used to. So I think maybe that's part of it. And I'm just playing really nicely.
So, Cam, further that, your strength's getting stronger or you've got different strengths in your game?
I think my strength's got a lot even stronger, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I remember one of my coaches years and years ago said, you'll be really good when you're older because you won't be able to hit, you'll hit the ball the same distance all the time, you'll flush one and it'll go 5-10 yards further on you, and it's kind of pretty true what's happening. So, I mean, that could be part of it too.
Further that, experience, obviously, the way the world has been in the last 18 months, do you have to get more selective in the tournaments you choose, or you just try and play everyone possible because we don't know what's going on?
I've been a little bit better at that. I have actually skipped events just because I know I'm either exhausted or the course doesn't suit me or, you play too much in a row, all that kind of stuff. But also, I started working with a guy over here who works with some players. I've been really good friends with him. He was a professional gambler, and I've got a little bit of that in me. I like gambling, so he loves talking to me. But he had all his players were taken up. He didn't want to work with anyone else, but he just started helping me the last few weeks. And there's almost like a Moneyball guy with golf, and there's quite a few guys using him, and he's given me a few pointers on a few things. And the last few weeks, I've really improved massively in them. And I should have finished top 10 at Pebble, and then I easily finished top 10 this week without doing anything too crazy, but just thinking about a couple of holes slightly differently.
So that Moneyball, he's saying, this hole, you're best to attack it, or your best to play safe, or is it the tournament? This is the field, and you'd stack up really well against it.
No, it's the he just gives me like six holes. It goes through traditionally like the last 5 years. This hole's played, you know, 0.5 over par. So if you can par it every day, you gain points. That's, you know, that's basically a shot a hole on the field. So there's four shots. That's just on one hole. And then, like at Pebble Beach, the second hole is a short par five that we can all reach. But he sends me a screenshot of where all the birdies come from. And the pins are touched either three or four from the edge. And you can see if you hit it to the right of the pin, on one of the pins, there's no birdies and actually a couple of bogeys. And they're only like 10 yards in a hole because it's just such severe slopes. So you've got to hit it left. And you hit it left and you're going to maybe chip. So just stuff like that that I already knew it, but when you see the live data, you're like, oh wow, like no one gets up and down over there, so you can't, you just eliminate that, and it's just helped me a little bit.
Well, it's helping. I mean, your last three tournaments, Cam, tie for 48th in the Farmers Insurance, which is a big event, and then tie for 21st at Pebble, and then tie for 7th yesterday. It now puts you 89 on the FedEx Cup standings. Things are going pretty well.
Yeah. And at the Farmers, I came dead last in putting that week, so that's how good I hit it. He looked at me that week and he's like, dude, you should be winning this event where you hit it. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I struggle on the greens here and I missed a few greens. I hit it here on a couple of holes. He goes, oh, you can't do that. And he showed me a thingo, like, all these, I don't know whether you guys get this information, but you can track people how they play. And it shows the whole field, and there's all these black dots means the bogey. He's like, you hit it there, and everyone else who hit it there made bogey. I'm like, oh, yeah, I did too, like. And you need to always hit the ball under the hole at Torrey Pines. So there's all that kind of stuff too. That, you know, a couple of holes, I hit it past the hole, and I three putted. And he goes, you just cannot hit it past the hole there because everyone three putts. I'm like, huh. Yeah, well, I didn't mean to, but you just take a club that can't even go past the hole now. So just the last 2 weeks, I've been way more particular with where I can and can't hit it, and it's paid dividends.
So is that real-time feedback, or is that post-round stuff?
Before I go out. So he'll have stats for the last 5 years, or
right.
He'll try and work out when the course is wet or dry, and he'll go to that, those particular stats. Like last week, for instance, he sent me the message was the par 5, I've got to play 10 under par. The winner played 10 under par last year. There's six holes that are really hard. He played an even par. And I played the par 5 last week, 10 under par, and the hard hole where I actually played 4 under par, which I just stuffed up one hole in particular. I played one hole 3 over, and another pretty easy hole. I missed 2 6-footers for birdie, and I stuffed it up on yesterday. I hit a terrible tee shot and made bogey. And that's the difference between me coming 7th and winning. Like, I had a par the 13th hole, which was in the middle of fairway each day. And then the 17th, if I make those 2 6-footers, and then I don't drive in the guns yesterday, I win the golf tournament, so that's how simple it is.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, Cam, I'm interested. Tie for 7th, but one off the lead going into the final round. You walk off 18. Are you happy that you finished tie for 7th, or are you feeling a bit frustrated that you didn't get closer? I'm interested in how you sort of reflect back on a tournament like that.
I was really frustrated. I was trying to... I think I bogeyed 14, and it was going to be hard to win from there. And then... So I was in the last few holes, when you realise you can't win and you're up there, you sort of get a bit flat, but you've got to push yourself to at least finish the tournament off, because it actually finishing 7th yesterday got me in the Players' Championship, which is a $15 million event.
Oh, fantastic.
So I get to play that now, and I've never played that. So if I actually got up and down from 75 yards out of a fairway bunker on the last to finish 7th, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't get in the Players' Championship. So just playing each hole out has got me in the Players' Championship next week. So, and it'll probably get me in Hilton Head and the Memorial and some other events later on in the year that I basically had no chance of getting in. So
awesome.
Just keeping your head down and playing good, it's going to get me some bigger events.
Talks of cricket.
Yes.
Because there is a record-breaking start to the WNCL season on the back of the blade of Elise Villani. She's been going gangbusters. What about this? 5 matches, 420 runs, at an average of 140. If you don't mind, the most recent performance was the 133 not out to defeat Tasmania, chasing down 256, if you don't mind, guiding us through all the way from the Vic's perspective. It's great to see her in great form and great to have her on the program. Elise Villani, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
Now, you are hot to trot, as they say in the classics. The numbers you're putting up are quite extraordinary. Were you confident coming in after the Big Bash season that this WNCL year would be going as it is at the moment?
To be perfectly honest, you know, I think in Melbourne it's been a pretty interrupted pre-season with all the lockdowns and whatnot. So I've actually, I think, kind of just moved past the fact that cricket's not the most important thing in my life anymore. So probably just a bit more relaxed and therefore just feeling a bit more calm out in the middle and, found a bit of a groove out there. So wasn't coming in feeling overly confident or anything, but sort of coming in just you know, it doesn't have to be everything, I guess.
I'm interested in that, Elise, and the way that changes your approach. Clearly, from a mental perspective, you seem, what you're saying there, you've freed yourself up from all the burden of having to perform, perhaps, on the back of the last 12 months and a bit of perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as an athlete, your whole career, you sort of fight with the fear of failure quite often, and I think it's something that you always want to, I guess, shrug off the back of your shoulders, but it's a lot more difficult being done than said. So, yeah, I just feel like maybe at the moment I'm in a space where I sort of realise that there's more important things in life and I'm actually able to enjoy the game for what it is, and I'm not too worried or feel as though if I don't make runs that it's really going to reflect poorly on me as a person. So I feel like I've sort of moved past that mental block, as you said.
Elise, it's fascinating that you just mentioned that, because we spoke to Peter Hanscom yesterday and he spoke about the anxiety of being in the national team and playing international cricket, the scrutiny, the pressure. He's gone back now to Victoria and he's enjoying his cricket a lot more and not worrying about the expectations so much. So it's quite similar to what you're talking about, and he's starting to thrive on that, and you're doing the same.
Yeah, I think with, you know, national selection, all that sort of thing, you're sort of spending a lot of your time trying to prove people right or prove people wrong in terms of selections, and I think It just wasn't working for me anymore, and I don't think it ever worked or does ever work for anyone, to be completely honest. So, heading into this season, I really wanted to make a point that I actually didn't want to prove anything to anybody else. I just wanted to prove to myself that I actually still had what it takes. I was getting a lot of questions around how long do you think you'll keep playing for and all that sort of stuff. And I'm only 31, so I felt quite young, and I just wanted to prove to myself that I can still match at this level and I was still good enough to be going around. And I think that just sort of, it eases the pressure of it. You're not thinking about anybody else and only just sort of, making sure that I knew what I was doing within myself.
Elise, you can, Jimmy Bartel here, you can play to 51 if you're averaging 140. So you're pretty well set and settled. Can we get Elise into our Media 11 side?
Well, she has done some commentary, so yes. She does. She's actually eligible.
But I want to ask you, because you've taken that mindset, surely then some of your thinking, and even with Vic selectors, there would have been an idea to go down the batting order, because if, you know, Alyssa Healy, Rachel Haynes are opening the batting and some other, you know, stars around at different states all opening the batting, was there a thought maybe to go down and bat four or five?
Not really, to be honest, only because I remember having a conversation with the Australian coach, Matthew Mott, a couple of years ago about that when I came back to Victoria from Perth. At that stage, I was batting in the middle order for Australia, and I just sort of asked him what his thoughts were around perhaps batting in the middle order for Victoria, and he just said to me that if you can open the batting, you can bat anywhere, and by opening the batting, you know you're guaranteed to get a hit, and it gives you the best opportunity to face as many balls as possible. So I've just sort of, ever since sort of having that conversation a couple of years ago, I've just sort of gone with that, and I do feel like, he is right. If you open the batting, you can sort of bat anywhere, and I just think at the end of the day, weight of runs sort of speaks volumes. So I don't really think it matters where you bat. I just think, selectors, if they want you in the team, they want you in the team. If they don't want you in the team, they don't want you in the team. And I don't think it really matters, where you are batting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Vics are flying back on top. Do you feel like, you're absolutely flying? You've got experience. Elise Perry coming to the side, clearly experienced player. That's what's winning you these, tough games at chasing 250, the experience that you calm under pressure?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have a really great team at the moment. I think you hear really good teams talk about how they, just seem to gel both on and off the field, and we've got a great mix of youth and experience, and you are right, we've got a lot of experience in lineup, quite a number of Australian girls in our lineup as well, and we're able to to sort of pass that experience on to the younger girls, and you know, their opportunities will come as well. Obviously, the Aussie girls are heading off soon, so they've only got one more game with the big side, and then they're off, and that's when the younger girls will be able to step up and have a lot more opportunity in the side. I know that the girls have sort of been stars of the strike, so to speak, in the batting lineup, and Annabelle Sutherland's been getting a bit toey on the sideline, and she's an absolute star, and she's going to be fantastic talent for the next 10 or so years. So, yeah, it's great. We're all really gelling, I think. Yeah, just really enjoying each other's company, and, yeah, it's been really great fun, to be honest.
Let's talk some footy while we've got Jim here, because Brisbane Lions midfielder Jared Lyons has been good enough to join us. 2 years in the system at Brisbane. It's been a very productive 2 years. Not quite the ultimate goal, but I'm sure 2021 they're looking to go a couple better. Jared, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you with us. It's been a very, very positive time for you at the Brisbane Lions in the last couple of seasons, albeit a very different year last year. What's been the off-season like for you after, what have you been playing now, 10 years in the game?
Yeah, it's certainly a little bit different when you've got a young family. Sort of just floated around Brisbane, really. Couldn't go too far, so and we didn't return till January, so we've got a good little chunk of time off, and we still made sure we were training together. A lot of the boys sort of trained together when we didn't really have to, so I think that's put us in good stead for the year.
Was there a, for you personally, was there a sense of, oh, bloody hell, we missed out an opportunity to play in a grand final at home last year? I mean, you won a final, which you weren't able to do 2 years ago, so there was progress, but was there a sense of missed opportunity last year from your perspective?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were playing such great footy until that prelim, and we really didn't come out and play well, and sort of didn't start well, which hurt us. And Geelong were very good. I mean, credit to them. That's the best footy I've seen them play for a while. So, I think the group was hurting and still hurting all the way up until we started this year. But I think the positive is it's actually got a really young group. So it's great experience for them. And a lot of the boys have come back fitter and probably hungrier and ready to go. So, it'll only make us better, I think, in the long run.
Jared, Jimmy Bartel here. Yeah, the great thing under Chris Fagan, there seems to be an improvement or a shift to do something different each season. What's been the big focus? Because you go back when he got in there, at first it was we're going to defend better. The next year was move the ball a bit better. What has been the next level for you guys?
Yeah, you're right. He's always got something to bring to the table each year. I think this year is probably with the rotations and the new sort of game is players been able to play multiple positions. We've probably got a fair amount of depth in our midfield, but to get more guys rolling through different areas, I think is the focus this year. So we're sort of not too one dimensional in both attack and offense. So that's going to be really exciting. We've got a lot of high draft picks that are just starting to sort of hit that 22, 23 mark, and are ready to play some good footy. So getting them through the middle in centre bounce and things like that is going to be a bit of a change.
So are we going to see different roles for any players in particular?
Without giving too much away, there's probably going to be guys that, you haven't seen in positions before, and it might be a little bit of a surprise, but we'll let that one come unfold over the next few weeks.
No, you're playing a good poker hand at the moment, keeping them nice and close to your chest. I want to ask you about one guy we haven't seen much for Brisbane, but I think he could be really important for you because what he allows others to do is Marcus Adams. Is he up and going and fit? Because when he's in there, Gardner and Andrews can go do their role a little bit easier.
He wasn't for a while. I think he's sort of just starting to play 4 minutes now. But actually, there's sort of fairly competitive for that sort of third tall spot at the moment. Gardner's been injured as well, so there's a few guys rolling through there. Lester's sort of reinvigorated himself as a sort of key defender, and so Marcus, Jack Payne, and Dizzy are all sort of in that area. I think it'd be Marcus and Jack Payne who are sort of fighting for that spot. So some good healthy competition, which is actually making a lot of blokes better. And yeah, you're right, Marcus. I think you look back to what he did to Tommy Hawkins a couple of years ago, where he kept him to about four or five touches. So we know his best is good enough. He's just got to get himself out in the park.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine you'd like the longer games compared to what you did have last year. But did you learn any sort of tricks with the shorter game that will make you a better player this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to start court as well. You can't sort of just drift into a game and expect to individually play well late in quarters and stuff last year, because quarter was over before you knew it, and sometimes you found yourself having one or no touches a quarter and you're like, oh, geez, the game gets away from you pretty quick. So, yeah, I think it's just finding that, I guess, getting into the game quicker was something that sort of helped last year. And from a team perspective as well, if you put 4 or 5 goals on the board in the first quarter, quite often you won the game. So it's something we'll take in. A fast start. Certainly on the weekend against Gold Coast, I think we kicked 7 or 8 goals in the first quarter. So we've probably taken that in from last year, and we'll keep running with that.
Now, Joe, the obvious question is about your new recruit, Joe Danaher. He obviously dominated last weekend. What were your impressions of him coming up, and has he exceeded your expectations, or is he different? What have you thought of him so far?
He's probably different to what I thought. Like, I was thinking a bit of a footy nothing, obviously coming from that Danaher family, but he's actually just a real quiet achiever. Like, he doesn't like the spotlight. He sort of goes about his business. He does his stuff, trains, like, loves it all, but then he's got a lot of interest outside of footy. So I think probably coming up here has really helped him just to switch off from the footy bubble a little bit, I guess, and just getting his body right. It's I don't think he's really missed a session, to be honest, over the last 3 months, which probably for the last 5 or 6 years hasn't been the case. So, yeah, we're really confident from what he's shown the last 3 or 4 practice games. Yeah, look out, I think.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.